We're trying to kill just a little time here while we get connected with our guest today. We're going to be talking to somebody from Survival International. Rebecca Spooner is her name. The issue that Survival International takes on is taking care of the uncontacted people in the world, the people who really don't have a lot of knowledge of the outside world because they have been isolated geographically, physically, for whatever reason, for basically since time itself began. And we tend to give them romantic names like the lost tribes or the forgotten people or the lost civilization of such and such. But in fact, is they're generally referred to by folks at like Survival International as the uncontacted people. Rebecca Spooner does join us now. She's with the organization Survival International, and she is the campaigner for uncontacted peoples in Peru. Rebecca, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you for having me.
So how long has Survival International been around?
42 years this year, so quite a while, and we've been working in the Peruvian Amazon, for example, where I'm working particularly at the moment, for nearly that long. So we started our campaign following some horrific reports that came out of the Brazilian Amazon surrounding the Yanomami tribe, who were being wiped out by the Brazilian government, and we've expanded our campaigns ever since, so we're working all over the world with tribal peoples.
Why was, in that particular situation, the Brazilian government trying to wipe out the Yanomami?
Well, it's been the policy of many countries in the past to get rid of the Indians, they call them, basically because of the land. They wanted to have access to the land. It was a sort of modern-day example of colonization. They wanted to go into the land, take away the gold, take away the resources, and that land was inhabited by indigenous peoples, and so they saw them as an inconvenience, and the easiest way to get rid of that inconvenience was to kill them off. Obviously, that's a policy that doesn't exist anymore. However, indigenous peoples all over the world are being killed off by or in the name of development.
It is often economic development. We talked before you got on about the search for minerals on the lands these people occupy, search for timber on the lands these people occupy, one of the desire to use the land for agriculture. These are often the motivating factors. But are the governments often complicit in these efforts to push the people off their land or displace them or kill them?
Almost always, because it's the government that implements policies that uphold the rights of indigenous peoples. And in many countries, there are good laws that protect the indigenous people's rights to their lands and their lives and their futures. But these are very rarely upheld by the governments, usually because of lack of political will, and also usually because money takes precedence over the lives of these peoples. So the government almost always has a very strong role to play in the displacement or the wiping out of indigenous peoples.
In the case of Brazil, which you mentioned, which back in the day had a policy of extermination, what is the policy now? Brazil is actually working to protect these people, aren't they?
Yeah. On paper, Brazil has a really good constitution, and it has a good legal system defending indigenous peoples. And indigenous peoples in Brazil do have a lot of their land titled to them. There are still tribes that don't have land. And they're fighting for that. But there are other tribes who have large swaths of land in the Amazon, for example. The problem in Brazil is, as I said before, this lack of political will, which doesn't stop people like loggers or oil companies going into indigenous people's territories and allowing them to work there, much to the detriment of the indigenous peoples. For example, there's a tribe called the Awa, who Survival says is the most threatened tribe in the world, who are living in this ever-shrinking island of forest in the Amazon. And it's shrinking because of the infiltration of loggers onto the Awa's land, and they're ripping it down at a really alarming rate. And the most scary part of the Awa's story is that some of the Awa still remain uncontacted, so they have no contact that's peaceful with the outside world. And those indigenous people are the most vulnerable because they have no immunity to diseases brought by outsiders. So any contact between them and the outsiders could result in their deaths, and which is quite often the case. And if that doesn't happen, then just as bad as the loss of their lands, which they rely on for absolutely every part of their survival, from their food to their shelter, everything that they need in their daily life is in the forest. And if the forest doesn't stand anymore, then they can't survive as a people.
Rebecca Spooner is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She is with the group Survival International, where she is the campaigner for uncontacted peoples in Peru. Our discussion is about uncontacted tribes and uncontacted people around the world and what is being done on their behalf. You can join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Is it fair to say that over time, Rebecca, the world does seem to be taking notice? Because I noticed that even Vanity Fair ran a piece on the fate of the Awa people you were just talking about in November.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've seen a huge amount of press attention, particularly since images were released by FUNAI, which is the Brazilian indigenous organization, the state Indian organization. They released them about 5 or 6 years ago, showing that there were these uncontacted tribes living in very remote parts of the Brazilian Amazon. Those pictures went completely viral, which is thanks in part, mainly actually, due to the internet, which obviously didn't exist that long ago, which allowed people all over the world to see that, you know, we do still have these indigenous people living in very isolated areas. The press attention has been a really positive thing in that it's spread information to people, and it's also helped us to put a lot of pressure on governments and companies to stop their work in areas where these uncontacted tribes live. So the situation, in a way, is getting better, but in another way, it's getting worse, because as the population expands and the drive to grab more and more resources from more and more isolated areas increases, the lands of these uncontacted Indians is under much more pressure than it ever has been in the past.
Let's come back to some real basic concepts here. I mean, the fact is that while they are generally uncontacted, it's not like they have no knowledge of the outside world. Is that generally fair to say?
Yeah, I'd say uncontacted tribes have a much greater understanding of the outside world than we would be led to believe. Usually an uncontacted tribe will have contact with other isolated indigenous peoples. What we mean by the term uncontacted, which isn't a perfect term in itself, but it is a useful one, is that they don't have any peaceful contact with mainstream society. So they will have chosen at some point in their history to isolate themselves. Many Amazonian uncontacted tribes chose to go to very isolated regions in the Amazon forest during the rubber boom 100 years ago, which was a time of a huge amount of violence, many people colonizing the Amazon for rubber tapping. This is at the time when tires were coming into greater and greater need because of the automobiles that were being created at that time. And many indigenous people were wiped out by the spread of disease. Others were enslaved, and the treatment of the indigenous people at that time was horrific. So some of the survivors of the rubber boom decided to go deep into the forest and have remained there ever since, you know, as nomadic peoples.
It's interesting. So in a sense, they are uncontacted because of previous contact with the quote-unquote civilized world.
Exactly. So in a way, sometimes it has been a choice for them to remain uncontacted for self-preservation. And those who remain uncontacted now have chosen to remain uncontacted. And the most important thing is that we respect their right to remain in their homeland, in their ancestral territories, until they decide to come out. It's very dangerous to enforce contact on these peoples because of this, you know, the dangers of the spread of disease and the violence that can occur during first contact. So it's really important that governments where these uncontacted tribes are living create reserves and protected areas that allow the uncontacted tribes the time and the space to decide when they want to make contact with mainstream society.
Is there a fairly uniform first contact procedure for any government or anything recommended by the UN or anything like that?
There are real failures, to be honest. There used to be in Brazil, again, a policy to forcibly contact these tribes. FUNAI at the time, the Indian organization in Brazil, thought that the best thing to do was to force contact with the tribes, bring them out of their nomadic, uncontacted, isolated existence into settlements. But after many failed attempts of doing that, in which over half of each tribe and sometimes up to the whole tribe was completely wiped out by diseases as common as a cold or flu, the government decided to change its policy to what it is now, which is to allow them the time and the space to decide when they want to come out and contact mainstream society. So in lots of countries, that is the policy. Unfortunately, many times the boundaries of those protected areas aren't respected and upheld by the governments and companies working in them.
That sounds like that could lead to something along the lines of the attractive nuisance, where you say, well, we're going to wait for them to come out. But then there are probably some people think, well, maybe we can help them decide it's time to come out.
Well, that's been the case with many missionaries in the past, as well as other people who want the resources from the land. There are, for example, in Peru, there is at the moment this gas and oil grab. They're so intent on getting the oil out of the ground very quickly that they're forcing the uncontacted and isolated peoples basically out of their traditional territories. Their hope is to settle them into areas where they won't move around so much, they won't need as much territory, and then they can exploit the oil and gas that's under the ground, much to the detriment of the uncontacted Indians living in those areas.
I noticed that, for example, in looking for pictures to help us tell this story on our website yesterday, I ran across a picture of the Bora people in Peru from 7 years ago or so. They appear to be wearing outfits. First of all, they're photographed at close range. This is not taken from a helicopter or plane, so there was some contact there. Mm. And they're wearing outfits that seem to have Western lettering that indicate the name of the tribe on there. So, I mean, there are some tribes that have had partial contact and just decided, you know, we really don't want much to do with you, so we're going to stay back where we are.
Yeah, I mean, all of these tribes have very differing levels of contact. There will be what's quite interesting, actually, is when those photographs that I was talking about earlier of the Brazilian uncontacted tribe were taken, many comments that you saw online were people questioning whether they really were uncontacted, because they had things like machetes made from metal, and they had other products that people thought were things that uncontacted tribes don't have. But in fact, there is this incredible inter-tribal network where tribes who have varying levels of contact will exchange goods amongst them. And there's no reason why an isolated tribal person won't have clothing or won't have machetes or won't grow plantain. All of these societies are changing and adapting all the time and do have differing levels of contact with other indigenous peoples. It's quite rare that a tribe will be so isolated that it won't have contact with anybody else, but it does happen. There have been cases of actual individuals who have been hidden in the forest, who have completely avoided contact with anybody else, and who have recently been contacted and have told their stories of how all of their family members were massacred, and it was only them that survived. And in order to, survive, they felt like they had to hide in the forest, and it's only now that they felt that they are confident enough to come out.
As far as anybody knows, Rebecca, are there still, there does seem to be a level of romance here, too, with people thinking, oh, you know, there might actually be people who are still living in Stone Age conditions in the world. I mean, is there any evidence that that is the case for anyone, anywhere?
Stone Age is very unlikely. I haven't come across any uncontacted or isolated tribal peoples who don't have some kind of access to metal goods, but then I'm sure there are some people who aren't using metal goods. The problem with the use of the term Stone Age and other terms like this, it sort of gives the impression that these peoples are living in the past, that they're not civilized, that they need to catch up with modern-day civilization. But in fact, as I say, all societies and communities are changing all the time. Just because somebody is using a certain type of tool or living out in their life in a certain place in a certain way doesn't mean they're not living in a modern society. It means that they have chosen to live in that way. So the term Stone Age, I think, is one that should be used very carefully and perhaps not at all for uncontacted tribes.
Fair enough. Rebecca Spooner, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She is with the group Survival International. She's the campaigner for uncontacted peoples in Peru. We'll talk more with Rebecca and take your phone calls and emails as well when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Thank you. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Today we're talking about uncontacted tribes, people who they're not entirely unaware of the outside world, but generally not wanting to have much to do with the outside world. They do face risks from what we call civilization because quite often their lands are coveted by people who think they can make some money off of minerals or logs or whatever have you on that land. Survival International is a group that works on behalf of uncontacted tribes. Rebecca Spooner is with Survival International as the campaigner for uncontacted peoples in Peru. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere you can hear us. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, and our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Rebecca, does Survival International have any figures on or estimates on the numbers of people who might actually be living in uncontacted tribes around the world?
It's a very rough estimate because of the nature of the way these people live and sure. The very isolated regions that they live in. But we estimate that there are around 100 separate uncontacted tribes all over the world, in places like West Papua, in Brazil, Peru, Bolivia, Paraguay. So within each of those tribes, it's very difficult to say how many people are in each tribe. We know, for example, that there's an uncontacted tribe in Paraguay whose number is quite small, anywhere between 12 and 50 people. But there may be much larger bands of hundreds of people in places like the Brazilian Amazon, where they are living in much larger swaths of land, which have less development and less outsiders going into them. So it is quite surprisingly high, the amount of people that are uncontacted.
The major concern you've listed thus far with contact, inadvertent or otherwise, is that there could be disease and there could be violence. Is there any concern about contamination of culture? Because it certainly does seem like in Brazil that Funai does a fair number of overflights and takes some pictures to document the fact that there are people back there.
Well, I suppose that could be a concern for some, but I think all human societies are adapting all of the time. We're all changing depending on our surroundings and the people that we meet all the time. So I don't think that there should be any real fear that an uncontacted tribe is suddenly going to completely change because they see aeroplanes flying over. They will have seen these for their whole lives anyway, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But, of course, once a tribe is contacted, and this is true amongst all indigenous peoples, it's really important that governments implement policies on education, on healthcare, that are in line with the indigenous people's practices themselves. So quite often, indigenous people simply won't be allowed to practice their ceremonies or their ways of belief. They'll have to dress in a certain way. They'll have to go to certain schools and learn the national language. And that is a way that culture is being wiped out across all indigenous peoples. And there are some countries that handle that much better than others.
Let us take a phone call. Here's Mark in Redding, California. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about uncontacted tribes with Rebecca Spooner from Survival International. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. Are there still evangelical Christian missionaries attempting to contact these people throughout Amazonia and areas of that nature?
Yes. Yeah, there are, although it is now against the law in many of these places, and in some cases entire missionary sets have been thrown out of the countries. But yes, that is still happening all across the Amazon region.
Any further question there, Mark?
Well, you know, these things are, you know, continuing to happen, sadly. I know that I remember in the 50s seeing people that had come back from the Amazon telling us about how they were doing such good Christian work there, bringing these pagans into the fold. It's really sad. Mm. Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call, Mark. Appreciate it. We have an email here from Bruce in Ashland who says there was a massacre in Ecuador recently of the Tagere from their own people who were wanting their resources. The old Andean cultures came from the Amazonian people. Besides Aborigines in Australia, these are very old cultures. Are you aware of the Ecuador story that Bruce is referring to?
Yeah, indeed. This is a very critical situation at the moment that's playing out in Ecuador. The Taramanani and Tagaeri are two uncontacted tribes that are living in the southern Ecuadorian Amazon. They're related to those two uncontacted tribes of the Warani, who are a contacted tribe. They've been settled and they have a lot of contact with the outside world. There are a lot of pressures in their homeland, which is within the Yasuni Park, which some people may have heard of, which is a highly biodiverse area. It's a place that the Ecuadorian government has supposedly been trying to protect. But now it's just given the go-ahead for oil companies to work in the region, which is going to put even more pressure on the uncontacted as well as the contacted Warani Indians. And many believe that the violence that is currently occurring between the indigenous peoples is due to the many pressures that are coming from the oil companies in that region. So it's something that we're looking into at the moment, and we hope to put more pressure on the Ecuadorian government to stop any oil work. They simply can't be safe oil companies working in areas where there are uncontacted tribes. They can't guarantee that there isn't going to be contact between the oil workers and the uncontacted Indians.
Is there any rule of thumb that any of these governments are using for how far apart any economic activities should be from uncontacted tribes, anything like that?
It's just all quite vague. There are some decent laws. And in fact, I believe the Ecuadorian constitution states that there shouldn't be any development work happening in areas where there is even suspected presence of uncontacted Indians. But there is suspected, and in fact, there's a lot of proof that there are uncontacted Indians in these areas, and yet they're still allowing the oil companies to go ahead. So there's lots of legislation, but there are many, many loopholes as well in the laws.
Is there a country that's doing things well, that is dealing with the uncontacted people fairly well? I mean, it sounds like Brazil has come a long way, but I don't know if it would amount to a model at this point of what would be an example of how to deal with uncontacted tribes.
Unfortunately, not really. Brazil and Peru, for example, do have good legislation. Brazil has particularly good legislation. In theory and on paper, uncontacted Indians' land is well protected. The main problem is the lack of political will. The second problem is that these are really large areas, and it's very difficult to man them. It's very difficult to stop the loggers going in. And it's such a bureaucratic and lengthy process to evict loggers and other encroachers in these areas that it just goes on for too long. And after years of the state being absent, the forest simply disappears. So there's unfortunately not a good example of any country that's doing the job very well at protecting uncontacted Indians.
Just as you were getting on, we were taking a call from one of our listeners who had some experience with people in the rainforest and was talking about, number one, the idea that they're disappearing is not a particularly helpful one. The other one is the idea that when you set aside parks as natural areas within countries in very large regions like in the rainforest, there tends to be a view that these regions are better without people in them. But her point was that, you know, people are part of the ecosystem, and in this case we should view the tribes as part of that. Is there any effort to integrate natural areas, national parks, particularly in South America, with uncontacted tribes?
Yeah, those are two really good points, actually. And we have seen in many different countries, and particularly actually in Africa at the moment, although this isn't with uncontacted tribes, it's just with indigenous peoples, they're being kicked off their land to make way for parks, effectively just for tourism and wildlife. But as we all know, any indigenous area or any area that is very biodiverse and still has the forest standing and still has the wildlife and the flora and fauna intact are areas that are inhabited by indigenous peoples. They totally rely on the surroundings and the forest and the wildlife for everything in their lives. And so they're the best placed people to protect those areas. So kicking them out is completely ignoring the fact that those are the real guardians of the land. They're the people that have been looking after them for millennia. And in parts of Peru, that is happening a bit, that we are seeing that some of the protected national parks are also indigenous territories, so the indigenous people are allowed to stay in them and they're allowed to protect them as they always have. But then there are some restrictions placed on the indigenous people, which makes it very difficult. For example, indigenous people want to be able to grow their own crops. They want to be able to make money from the forest as well. When they're living in a national park, those activities are very difficult. But in areas where there are uncontacted tribes, there are certain areas that have been protected as national parks rather than reserves for uncontacted tribes. And those are actually, they have much better protection than the uncontacted tribes reserves do. For example, in Peru, an oil company isn't allowed to work in a national park, but it is allowed to work in a uncontacted tribes reserve. So the law, again, is faulting in that, but it is actually quite useful for the uncontacted Indians to have these national parks.
Is there a fair level of confidence that at least there's been a cataloging of all the uncontacted tribes, that we generally know approximately where they are?
Again, not really. In Brazil, yes, there has been some really great work, and they really do know the whereabouts of many of the uncontacted tribes. I suspect they still don't know the whereabouts of many of the tribes because it's so difficult, and you can't necessarily spot an uncontacted tribe settlement from the air. In other parts of the world, such as Peru, there hasn't really been enough research into where the uncontacted Indians are, and this case in Ecuador at the moment is really proving to be very difficult, because while the government is allowing the oil companies to go ahead and start its work, it's put absolutely no resources or time into trying to find out where the uncontacted Taramanani Indians are and how many there are of them. So really, states need to put in much more resources, time and money into finding out where these uncontacted Indians are and then demarcating their land to make sure that nobody enters it.
Is there something of a paradox here, Rebecca Spooner, in the sense that you want the uncontacted people to be left alone, but at the same time you need to let the world know of what's happening to them?
Well, I mean, perhaps. What we want is for their rights, which they have granted to them under international law and the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, to be upheld. And those rights, one of those rights is that they have the right to be left alone, that they have the right to their territory, to their lands, and to their lives. If forced contact occurs, then none of those rights can be upheld because of all of the dangers that come with contact. A tribe has to be able to decide when it wants to make contact with the outside world, and we don't ever say that they should be completely left alone, that nobody should touch them, that nobody should go there, but it has to be the tribe's decision when they want to make that first contact. Finding out where exactly they are, it's not really a paradox, because many indigenous peoples living in those isolated regions will know the whereabouts of the tribes. There are ways to monitor, you know, what space they're using. So it is possible to find out where they are without actually coming into contact with them. But these are more expensive operations that the states are generally unwilling to carry out.
I was reading an account not long ago of an attempt to at least catalog or at least document that there were certain people living deep into the rainforest, I think in an area where a highway is going to go through in South America. But there was an effort at least to have somebody along who knew enough of their language that he could shout a few words like, don't come near us, and things like that. There must be some really intricate things that have to go on in an effort to try to figure out where they are, who they are, and yet not really mess with them.
Yeah, that is that. I've heard that actually in the case of oil companies as well. They tell their workers to carry megaphones around so that they can shout at the uncontacted Indians if they come into contact with them. But that is not a very effective way of ensuring that unwanted contact doesn't occur. The best way is to be carry out investigations with the other indigenous peoples on the ground to find out where their traditional territories are, because separate indigenous peoples will know exactly where their territories are and will know where other indigenous peoples' territories are, and they'll be well aware of the dangers that could occur from infiltrating somebody else's reserve or protected area or just the land that they use traditionally. So it's only through communication with the indigenous peoples who are already in some contact with mainstream society that you can properly demarcate the areas where outsiders shouldn't be going in.
And I'm certain a lot of people will want to know, how can they help? I mean, if people want to do something through Survival International or any other group for that matter, what are some of the things they can and should be doing?
Well, the way that survival works is we lobby governments and companies. We write letters to them. We collect names for signatures and we petition them. We put out press releases about what's going on at the moment in all of these areas, what the companies are doing, who's infiltrating whose territory. And we put as much pressure as we can on the governments and companies to stop any illegal work that's going on in areas that are inhabited by uncontacted tribes. So the best way for listeners to help is by visiting Survival's website, which is survivalinternational.org, and looking up our campaigns. And then there are lots of actions that you can do through our website. You can obviously also donate to our campaigns there. And you can carry out your own form of lobbying through writing letters, writing to the press, and drawing the world's attention onto these issues. The more people that know about uncontacted tribes, the more we can get together and ensure that their lands are protected.
All right, Rebecca Spooner from Survival International, thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you for having me.
Good to have you. Tomorrow on the Exchange at 8 o'clock, our First Friday Art segment returns. It's the first Friday in December. Charlotte and I will run down lists of events in the performing and visual arts, and you can call in and join us. At 8:30, okay, we're going a little soft. We're talking to the folks on the Wienermobile. It's probably the only time we'll ever get a chance to do this. And then at 9 o'clock, we'll talk to David Zaslow, Ashland Rabbi, about his latest book about Jesus, who he calls First Century Rabbi. That's all tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange. Our producer and today's engineer, Charlotte Duren. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Please join us again tomorrow at 8 for another edition of the Jefferson Exchange here on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. And have a great day.